everyone, I'm Colin Ellis, best-selling author, award-winning public speaker, and facilitator of global workplace culture change. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get people managers from around the world to share actionable things that you can do too to create a great place to work. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Culture Makers podcast with me, Colin Ellis. I am delighted today to be joined by Deb Cram. Now, Deb has a diversified background in film, multimedia, and technical industries, and a strong focus on maintaining humanity and care as part of a vibrant employee and candidate experience. She has a fantastic and varied career, including stints for established companies such as Walt Disney, Industrial Light & Magic, Spinifex Group, and Double Negative, or DNEG. But also startups, creative organizations such as Autopilot and Mabel as well. She's skilled in scaling companies and their cultures to quickly meet business growth. She prides herself on the ability to create strong relationships, build practical, effective communication, and work with creative environments to help others thrive. She is currently the head of talent acquisition and operations at DNEG and joins me now from Sydney. Hello, Deb.
Hello, Colin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's it like hearing all of that read about yourself?
It's like I've left my body, to be honest. It's just, you know, it's for me, it's just been a job and a passion. And you know, for that, and then when you hear it all come back, it's, well, yeah, quite insane.
It's, you know, one of the things that I often say is that as humans, we're just trying to do the best that we possibly can. And obviously, when I'm talking to bigger cultures and groups of people, I'm always keen to point out that no one wants to be the worst version of themselves, but we have a choice, and we have a choice to make a positive impact. Is it something that you've thought about throughout your career, or is it something that as you've become, I suppose, a little bit more experienced, you've seen the environments around you that you've worked hard on, would you say?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, there was always something in me. I mean, even as a child and you know, the way I saw the world and the things that I was drawn to, there was always an understanding of how things work and wanting to make things better. You know, I want to have a good life and a good career and a great place to work. And so, you know, we're all the same. So it became, once I started to see how things came together and how the positivity in a workplace happened, and it's like that dopamine hit that everyone talks about these days that you get from the reward of doing something, and it can be the smallest thing, and it just makes you feel great for the rest of the day. Yeah, and I just kind of learned from my own experience and watching how people grew around me.
So let's start with Disney. That's a great place to start. Like, that's the first time I've ever said that on a podcast. Was Disney was that your first job? How did that kind of door open up for you? I'm sure listeners will be fascinated. Yeah. Like, how do you get a job at Walt Disney?
Yeah, well, I didn't think that I could, and everyone told. I mean, as a child, all I wanted to do was work for Disney. I loved, I breathed, I drew Disney characters all day. It was just a fascinating place for me, like the original, you know, movies, Pinocchio, Bambi. And I always said to my parents, you know, I want to work for Disney. And they're like, well, that's just not going to happen. And look, you know, I grew up in the era, you know, where you could, you know, go to college and it didn't cost you anything and you could make decisions and you could do art degrees. And so I did. I when I left school, I did a Bachelor of Fine Arts and probably didn't really know what I was going to do in my life, but ended up sort of in a few jobs. And then there was a ad in a paper for an animation course, a six-week animation course by an advertising agency in North Sydney. And my brother sent it to me. He was working at the Herald at the time and said, you might want to do this. So I did that. I did the 6 weeks. We made a short film. Cut to the person who was running the course went into Hanna-Barbera. They were in Sydney at that time, and they were making sort of like Scooby-Doos and Top Cats. And,
that's right. And I remember Hanna-Barbera. But
So he went in to shoot all the students' films, and somebody saw my short film and said, can we meet her And it was one of those chance moments. My short film got viewed by somebody. I went in, never been in an animation studio before. And they started me within a month. I had a job doing, and I was terrible at it. I was so bad. Because it's a different way of drawing. And you know, it takes a lot of practice. And you know, it was one of those times where, you know, you just work hard. Everybody helped you. You got the training on the job. It wasn't always easy. There was a lot of tears. And then finally, you learn how to do it. And I was just in love with it. I was obsessed. So from Hanna-Barbera, they closed down and Disney were looking for a new offshore site for their TV shows, and they took over the staff. So honestly, I was just taken along with the furniture and went into, but then I was only working for Disney. No one can believe that story.
That is crazy. And let me just say, if some of the furniture is broken, they always throw it out. So clearly they thought the furniture was good furniture.
Yeah. So we became Disney, and we did some great TV work, and then we started to grow, and the company started to get into, I'm showing my age now, we started to get into direct-to-DVD DVDs, and the studio started to grow and turn into more of a, not a feature animation, but like a next level up away from TV. And the company invested a lot of money in it, and I got promoted to managing a team of 30 artists. So I was training. I was there for 17 years, and I did, recruitment, training, producing. And I would have probably still been there if they hadn't closed the studio down because of the technology. We moved into CG and traditional animation was closed down. So, yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind, but I was hooked. And, we did a lot of management training at Disney and a lot of team building. And I think I really learned the basics of what I wanted to do from that. You know, I wanted to move on from just drawing and actually pull creative teams together.
I'm going to come back to that in a minute. I've got a couple of questions. So my first question is, your short film that you did that got you noticed, what was it about? I'm sure people are like, ask her the question, what was the film about? What was it about?
Yeah, it wasn't actually a film. We just did a kind of a short film of a small squirrel skipping and finding an acorn and leaning down to get the acorn. And when it touches it, it bursts in its face. And it was another squirrel who had set up a balloon to look like an acorn. So it was a gag,
right?
In a very short film. But
I still have it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you should put it on LinkedIn, My Origin Story by Deb Crown. So that's the first question. The second question is, I'd love to see it, by the way, so what kind of shows were Disney producing? What kind of shows were you working on? Because this was still in Sydney, right? This was in Australia. Yeah, so what kind of shows were they working on here?
They were working on, like I said, started off on TV, so it was TV shows. So Winnie the Pooh just sort of Saturday morning Disney shows. And then we moved on to direct-to-DVD, which were all the sequels. So the first one we started working on was The Lion King 2, which was huge. And it was the turnaround for our whole studio. We grew. We got into a new studio. They invested in new equipment. This was huge. This was like The Lion King was one of the biggest feature films that they put out. And then we were doing the direct to video. And yeah, we had to do a lot of training. A lot of the supervisors got taken over to San Francisco, to go to the zoo there, to do some drawings, to meet the team. Yeah, it was big. So then we just started doing all the director videos. So we moved on to Bambi, Peter Pan, all the big ones.
All
so
the classics.
Pretty much all the classics. Yeah. And this went on for about 2-3 years. We were just, there was three going through the building at one time. So one in production, one in the middle, and one, going out. It was like this massive, big 3-floor studio in Haymarket in Sydney, and we were just moving these drawings through the building. It was crazy.
That is amazing. I often say that my childhood was defined by Disney movies and Beatrix Potter books. I still have this memory of watching Pinocchio in the first house that we had as a family. I still have this memory. I think it must have been the Christmas time. Anyway, God, I can talk about the past forever. Yeah. So let's go back to kind of creative industry. You know, I watched a lot of documentaries about creative industries. I've read a lot about creative industries. Obviously, I've known you for about a year. We've met a couple of times, and I really clued myself up on creative industries. What's different about the industry? So when you talk about, you know, becoming fascinated by team dynamics, and you know, and back then that's what we called it. We called it teamwork. We haven't really called it culture, except for the last maybe 7-8 years. What was it about the environment where you thought, oh, I could make a real difference here?
I think the creative team and the projects they work on, they're passion projects. I mean, you just talked then about, you know, the impact Pinocchio had on you, and you got a bit misty about it. That's the thing. I mean, these projects, they mean something, and it's what everyone talks about when they talk about cultures and teamwork. And I saw that firsthand. People were, this was, they were addicted to working on these shows. They were a big part of their life. They all loved the characters, and it was hard work putting a movie together, animated, live action, whatever. It's really, really tough, and you've got to, you know, the bar is high, and your deadlines come quickly, and you've got no time. You know, you've got to polish it, but then you've got to hand it over. And so I found it really interesting keeping them focused on the deadlines and the business side of it, and balancing their passion and you know, that they just, you know, how much they actually put into it. Because there's a lot of work that actually gets cut out of these films. And it's, you know, when an animator gets a whole sequence cut, they are devastated. You know, it's like you cut off, you know, their arm. And so I found the dynamics really just so, so powerful and more interesting than any other industry I've ever worked in. And I just wanted to coach and train and be there and pull these, you know, I had gone through, like I said, a very intensive management training. Disney brought in some consultants, similar to yourself, came in and did a bit of a talk and took us away for weekends, and we did all the team bonding. And then I actually got asked to run the future leaders course at Disney, where we would take away the next leaders and start doing the same thing with them. So I got really involved with something that I'd already gone through. So I'd kind of gone through as a student, and then they asked me to sort of coach the new people through. So it was an interesting experience for me, and I was learning and growing at the time. I mean, I wasn't very old at the time, I'd say, for being in management. And it was a really vibrant environment, and it was easy to keep on improving yourself and being inspired by the people around you. And watching these, and we always had an amazing product at the end. So after eight months or a year, everybody could see this beautiful thing that they created. And then it was like, let's get started on the next one. And you know, we're going to make it better. And we're going to do this. And how are we going to solve this? And you could see it was like, it was really, really inspiring. It was a great time.
So I mean, you've worked for Disney, for Animal Logic, VFX, Industrial Light and Magic. Do these companies, Deb, have people like yourself, you know, way back when, do they have people who are just queuing up to get jobs based on movies that they've, so obviously they've got to have the skills. I mean, you know, I always say your skills get your foot in the door, but it's your personality that gets you the job. Has that changed, or is that still the same? You know, people are kind of queuing up to work there.
They're queuing up for the actual creative work, what they do. Obviously, they love the projects. Not everyone gets to work on the project. You know, once you come in, I mean, there's lots of them going through, and you know, they're all different. But I think from working really closely, you're attracted at first by the product, but then when you actually go through the process, it is amazing. And there's a different part of the pipeline, and everybody has a specialty. And some people are generalists, and some people love photography, and so they get into lighting, and they can become CG supervisors. And you know, it can take you to some pretty amazing projects and roles. So they, once you get in it and you do well, it, the sky was the limit for your career. You know, you can really work hard and take a, you know, take your specialty and polish it. And I think people really see the opportunities as soon as they walk in the door.
I would say, you know, technology is, it's continually changing the world of work. I feel like in the creative industries, though, filmmaking, production, visual effects especially, the speed has just been phenomenal. How do the cultures keep up with that change, Deb? Because it's not like you can just introduce a new tool every week. There's got to be some thought that goes into that. You know, in your experience, how have you seen technology done well in the creative industries?
It's just that it is fast. It is coming in fast, and software is developing. And since I started, I moved over from animation to visual effects, which is a completely different pipeline. You know, the software that we were using at Animal Logic is no longer this, and it's something new. And each software that we use has version 18, version 20, version 22. Short answer, I think it is because it's moving and in being introduced so quickly, and people are upskilling that keeps them interested and motivated. You're not just going in and using an old PC from 1995, you know. It's, and everybody is geeky, you know. The tech talks and the new software, and they are just, you know, a lot of them write code now. It's not so much I guess we talked a lot about the art of Disney, but it's a whole different industry now, and it is very techy. And there's obviously the artistic side of it, but the team, you know, learn Python and they write scripts and they fix things. You know, it's becoming a lot, moving much more into the sort of technical side for them. And I think that's the challenge.
I can't remember who it was I was speaking to, but we talked about this concept of the technical individual, and yes, you have to be technically very good at your job and you have to geek out on it. It's not just IT people or people who are good at technology geek out. You can geek out on whatever job. You know, my daughter loves ballet. She geeks out on that when she's talking to me, when she's not moaning about how her knees are aching. But you still have to come together to actually produce stuff. It's not just about the individual, right? And I think the creative industry as well, it's all about these little subcultures, and you have handoffs between one department and then another department has to do their bit. You go.
No, I was going to say you've hit it exactly. It's that pipeline process. You know, if you don't do your bit, the next person down the line can't get on with their bit, and sometimes it goes sideways. And there's different, components that rely on each other so intensely to get this through and to meet these deadlines. And it's quite powerful when you have to hand off to someone.
Yeah, I think it was Jon Favreau. If you don't know Jon Favreau, he's currently the director of Iron Man. But for people listening, he's also recently done The Mandalorian. I think I was watching an interview. I love The Mandalorian. He was doing an interview about this, and he talked about the importance of on-set culture. And it's the first time I think I've watched a filmmaker being interviewed, and he talked about if we didn't have the on-set culture where everybody knew their bit, is that actors wouldn't be able to do what they do, directors wouldn't be able to do what they do, which very much speaks to that pipeline. You've had some access to filmmakers. Do you see that they're interested in culture and teamwork? Has that increased over time, Deb, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, most people now who make films, produce films, appreciate the bigger cause and the how important it is to make sure you spend time sort of building that team bond and trust and support, and otherwise your production just won't get made. I think they've realized the hard way. We've all heard some stories where things have just fallen apart, not just in the film industry, but you definitely need to have everybody on board and working towards a common value and process and end point. And if you don't have that, you don't have anything. They won't move things forward. So it's definitely well, really inspiring to see that now everybody's appreciated. Even like, you know, a runner who goes and gets the coffees and you know, they're valued. Back in the day, they probably weren't as valued as they are now, but everybody is supported.
And so I guess for you then, Deb, you know, as someone who's involved in talent acquisition and operations, of course, in talent acquisition, is part of your job to sell the culture of the organization to the individual to ensure that that you have a really good values match? We talk all the time about culture fit, but as you and I both know, it's about having a set of values within the organization and then finding someone that shares those values. Is that a key part of your job, would you say now?
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, in this day and age where, you know, there's a lot of big tech companies that come with all the bells and whistles and there's lots of benefits and paid benefits, people really just want to know the heart of the place and the culture and how it's run and what your values are and if it's a good fit for them. And I'm doing the same thing. And you know, it's basically that. It's like, this is what we have. Is this the sort of place that you would like to work? Is this the sort of place that you're looking for? And I'm finding more and more now when I screen people and talk to people about a role, they're all looking for that fit. They've learned. They've been in some places that aren't quite the right fit. So now it's a big part of the interview process is, you know, once you start to get into it, it's about the culture. And it is my job. I mean, there's a lot of people who talk about other, you know, companies' culture. But really, that's what you should be asking the people you're in and the people that you meet. And we don't just do me. There's a whole lot of pros people, you know, whenever we do a new role and we're interviewing, there's about four or five people that will meet with this person. And so they all get to sort of, you know, impart some of the culture onto them in a different way from a different part of the pipeline, which I really like.
Yeah, I really like that too. And that, for me, is a hallmark of a good culture, is that you get to speak to lots of different people. You know, I joke a lot of the time about the fact that you can tell when an organization isn't focused on culture when you have one interview and you're in. At that point, they're just looking for someone with a pulse to do too much work that they've lined themselves up for. I remember spending some time at Zappos, a retail company in the US prior to the pandemic. And there was about four different sets of people that they met, and some very senior people, just to make sure that they had this good sense of culture so that they knew, you know, what to expect from day one. It's great to hear that that's the approach that you take too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can, depending on the role, you can get up to about four or five interviews and even go back and do a second with one particular person. And like I said, you know, there's the more junior roles where it might be one or two people. It's just depending. But, you know, for the more senior roles, which are the most important ones, because they're going to come in and influence people, quite a lot of people from internal get involved, which I really like. And then there's a broader discussion. And I do like the idea of the candidate gets to sort of kick tires and ask different questions to different people. I love that.
Yeah, I'm working with a global organization at the minute. And I was in a session in Europe earlier this year, and the CEO got asked a question about how they hire. It was really interesting. It was from one of human resources managers from one of the countries. And he said, our emphasis is on finding someone who believes the thing that we do. We'd rather have a hole in our organization than an asshole. And I thought that was really good.
I mean, there's been so much I've read, and, you know, there's a lot of those great sayings, you know, it's like, you know, you don't want the, you know, the kind of the senior jerk or the person in charge of a lot of people who's just really awful and kind of not really sort of part of your culture, but running, you know, a team of 30 people. And but then people say, well, but they're so good at what they do. And you're like, well, actually, no.
Yeah,
it doesn't work that way. It's not actually benefiting the team. But you know, I'm really lucky. I work with some amazing people, and I'm really loving you know, particularly last 5 years, I've had, you know, I've met some really interesting people. And even when we were going through the pandemic and lockdown, I think I was working at ILM at the time, and there was so much support for everyone. We were lucky to be able to work all the way through. But and you asked me early on, you know, about the projects and everybody pulling together. And honestly, every time I start recruiting and I go out there, people are interested about the people who've already joined or who are working at the place already. It is about the people. They're wanting to move to the people that they like working with and know about. And it's becoming more and more about that, which is really special because it is about the team that they're going to be working with rather than the actual film.
So one last question then, which is it's a nice segue from that point. Given the fact that culture is now becoming more and more important, and you know it's really seen as a differentiator in the marketplace. So what do you do then, Deb, to keep your own skill sets current on culture? What do you do to kind of stretch your own knowledge? People are always interested in what others do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I'm absolutely, you know, obsessed with reading new books and old books and just talking to people, going to, you know, meetings and startups and just anywhere I can just understand how people are, you know, dealing with all these cultural designs and problems and solutions. I'm just connecting. I think it's just keeping myself relevant and understanding that things are going to change and they're changing again. You know, we're going to, next 5 years, we're going to have, you know, dare I say it, AI and all of that. It's out of the bag. We won't dwell on that too much. But just, you know, I'm always fascinated about what the environment and the industry and how it's going to impact the teams and trying to get ahead and stay ahead of it and think about it rather than, oh, this is the way it's going to be for the next 10 years. We know that's not true. So I guess it's just future-proofing and always trying to stay ahead. And just walking the corridors and listening to people and chatting. It's like it's the basic, I know, but it's definitely how I've kept myself relevant, I think. Don't really know what
else to say. Yeah, no, that's fine. I think, you know, there's so much to be said for actually just walking and talking to people, you know, kind of what do they think? What do they expect? What's the lived experience? You know, I said not long ago to a CEO, he said, what's one thing I can immediately do? I was like, just go and talk to a bunch of people and find out how they're going. Like, you know, that's so, just the best way, right?
So easy. And I mean, I guess that's why I kind of stalled there because everyone gets asked about that. And I don't really have a magic answer. It's like, you know, you're constantly keeping yourself. I mean, the same as you. I mean, you know, you never stop. You never stop reading. Look at, you've got all your books. And there is a point where it is about your own lessons and your own, you know, experiences that you start to go, I've been here before, but it's just a different sort of environment, but I've done this before, and you kind of know the basics, but you end up sort of relying on a lot of things that are back in your head that you forgot all about. So life experiences.
Well, Deb, it has been just fascinating to have you on the show today. Some fabulous insights. Wishing you all the very best for the role at DNEG, and thanks again for being a guest on the Culture Makers podcast.
Thank you, Colin. It's been wonderful.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the link with your colleagues and friends or with your connections on social media. If you'd like to find out more about the work that I do, head to www.colindellis.com or find me on LinkedIn.